is politically motivated and has no relation to the humanitarian situation in Yemen. They believe that the UN must take real actions against the Saudi blockade if it has real intentions to end the suffering of millions of Yemenis. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
On Friday, a Palestinian Day event dubbed Women Fighting for Freedom took place in the Verano Garden, not far from Rome's major University of La Sapienza. The one-day initiative gave the public a taste of what the next Palestine festival will be in September. The focus was on the role played by the women in safeguarding the Palestinian culture from the Israeli occupier.
L'importanza che assume la donna nelle varie lotte.
The women play a crucial role in all struggles, whether they are Chileans, Cubans or Palestinians. It's the women who provide an education to the young Palestinians. It's the women who provide assistance in the refugee camps. It's them, again, who pass down our culture through the generations.
The role of the women fighting for freedom was discussed during a round table, the liberation of the territories from the Israeli occupation and the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination were also among the topics touched on during the meeting.
Over the past days, Israel has resumed bombarding the northern parts of the Gaza Strip. This after hundreds of Palestinians, including women and children, were killed in previous Israeli bombardments of the Gaza Strip carried out between May 10 and May 20. Israel's airstrikes also brought widespread devastation to the already impoverished territory.
What is going in Palestine is clearly against the international law, against the UN resolutions. And what is happening by keeping some countries their silence is giving impunity to the occupier.
Unfortunately, nothing will change if the UN and all major countries continue not to take a firm stance on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
People at Rome's Palestinian Day event have called on Palestinians to remain steadfast and fight for their rights despite their suffering. Max Civili, Rome.
In the limelight.
The rapid rise of the highly transmissible strain in the UK has put countries in Europe and North America on watch. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Ewan Calloway, researcher. This article is published under the heading Delta Coronavirus Variant. Scientists brace for impact. Stay tuned for more. When the first cases of the SARS-CoV-2 Delta variant were detected in the UK in mid-April, the nation was getting ready to open up. COVID-19 case numbers, hospitalizations and death were plummeting thanks to the months of lockdown and the vaccination programs. 2 months later, the variant, which was first detected in India, has catalyzed the third UK wave and forced the government to delay the full reopening of society it had originally slated for June 21st. After observing the startlingly swift rise of the Delta variant in the UK, other countries are bracing for the variant's impact if they aren't feeling it already. Countries without large vaccine stocks, some scientists worry that the variant could be devastating. In my mind, it will be really hard to keep out this variant, says Tom Wenzeler, an evolutionary biologist and biostatistician at the Catholic University of Leuven in Belgium, adding it's very likely it will take over altogether on a worldwide basis. Delta, also known as B1617.2, belongs to a viral lineage first identified in India during a ferocious wave of infections in April and May. The lineage grew rapidly in some parts of the country and showed signs of partial resistance to vaccines. But it was difficult for researchers to disentangle these intrinsic properties of the variant from other factors driving India's confirmed cases past 400,000 per day, such as mass gatherings. Delta variant has been linked to a resurgence of COVID-19 in Nepal, Southeast Asia, and elsewhere, but its UK spread has given scientists a clear picture of the threat it poses. Delta seems to be around 60% more transmissible than the already highly infectious Alpha variant, also called B117, identified in the UK in late 2020. Preliminary evidence from England and Scotland suggests that people infected with Delta are about twice as likely to end up in hospital compared with those infected with Alpha. The data coming out of the UK is so good that we have a really good idea about how Delta variant is behaving, says Mats Albertsen, a bioinformation at Aalborg University in Denmark. That's been an eye-opener, he added. Denmark, which, like the UK, is a world leader in genomic surveillance, has also seen a steady rise in cases caused by Delta variant. Although far fewer than most other European countries, it is only a matter of time before the variant becomes dominant in Denmark, says Albertsen. But the hope is that its expansion can be slowed through vaccination, surveillance, and enhanced contact tracing. He says it's going to take over. Meanwhile, the Danish government is easing restrictions, not reimposing them. Restaurants have been opening for months to individuals who have been vaccinated or received a recent negative test. And as of June 14th, masks are no longer required in most indoor settings. Cases of the Delta variant in the UK are doubling roughly every 11 days. Delta is also on the rise in the U.S., particularly in Midwest and Southeast. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention declared it a variant of concern on June 15th. But patchy surveillance means the picture there is less clear, according to nationwide sampling conducted by the genomics company Helix in San Mateo, California. Delta is rising fast in the U.S. Using a rapid genotyping test, the company has found that the proportion of cases caused by Alpha fell from more than 70% in late April to around 42% as of mid-June, with the rise of Delta driving much of the shift. Jeremy Camille, a virologist at Louisiana State University Health in Shreveport, expects Delta to eventually become dominant in the U.S., but to be somewhat blunted by vaccination. However, vast disparities in vaccination rates could lead to regional and local variation in cases and hospitalization caused by Delta, says Jennifer Surtees, a biochemist at the University of Buffalo, New York, who is conducting regional surveillance. She notes that 70% of eligible New Yorkers have received at least one dose of vaccine, a milestone that triggered the lifting of most COVID-19 restrictions recently, but that figure is below 40% in some parts of the state. Communities with high proportions of African American and Hispanic individuals, where vaccination rates tend to be very low, could be especially hard hit by Delta. These are populations that are really at risk of a localized outbreak from Delta. So I think it's really important to still keep tracking and watch this as much as possible, Surti says. Data from Helix, a nearly 20,000 sample sequence since April, suggests that the Delta variant is spreading faster in U.S. counties, where less than 30% of residents have been fully vaccinated, compared to the counties with vaccination rates above that threshold. Delta poses the biggest risk, scientists say, to countries that have limited access to vaccines, particularly those in Africa, where most nations have vaccinated less than 5% of their populations. The vaccines will never come in time, says Wenselaers. If these kinds of new variants arrive, it can be very devastating. Surveillance in African countries is extremely limited, but there are hints that the variant is already causing cases there to surge. Several sequences of the variant have been reported in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where an outbreak in the capital city of Kinshasa has filled hospitals. The variant has also been detected in Malawi, Uganda, and South Africa. Countries that have close economic links to India, such as those in East Africa, are probably at the greatest risk of seeing a surge in cases caused by Delta, says Tulio Do Oliveira, a bioinformation and director of the KwaZulu-Natal Research and Innovation Sequencing Platform in Durban, South Africa. In his country, all of the Delta cases have been detected in shipping crews at commercial ports, with no signs yet of a spread in the general community. South Africa is in the middle of a third wave of infections caused by the Beta variant, also known as B1351, identified there last year. This, combined with a lack of travel from countries affected by Delta, should make it harder for a new variant to take hold. Similar factors could be keeping Delta at bay in Brazil, which is battling another immune-evading variant called P1 or Gamma, says Gonzalo Bello, a virologist at Oswaldo Cruz Institute in Rio de Janeiro, who is a part of a team conducting national surveillance. So far, Brazil has sequenced just 4 cases of the Delta variant in the country. While countries gird themselves against the Delta variant or hope that it passes them by, researchers say they need to watch for even greater threats. What most people are concerned about are the next variants. If we start to see variants that can really challenge the vaccines, says Albert Sen.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, zeal and ignorance. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Zeal, in general terms, is used to express enthusiastic interest and devotion to a cause, and sincere diligence in accomplishing it. Whether important or insignificant, everyone has causes he eagerly embraces throughout his life. Enthusiasm, often directed toward materialistic benefits, also surfaces when worldly passions are the issue. Some people exert efforts to be rich, to have a brilliant career, or a prestigious position, while others try to appear superior or to earn prestige, respect, and praise. For example, everyone is familiar with the determination of a high school student shows to pass the college admission test. The enthusiasm of a person hired for a desired position in a company, for instance, or the ambition and effort exerted for a business deal which is expected to be profitable. There is one strikingly common feature to all these: enthusiasm. It produces a distinctive and strong character in a person which would be unlikely to appear in the absence of zeal. If you look at some of the sportsmen, right? They have this special type of zeal, this special type of energy, this special type of spirit, right? They want to prove something. How in the world do they develop this sort of a push, you know, for which they work out, they do so many other things? It is because of this very zeal. And after we come back from this small little break, we're going to talk about ignorance. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are talking about zeal and ignorance. Ignorance is usually understood as being uneducated and uncultured. However, the ignorant people depicted throughout our discussion are those who are ignorant about the religion of Islam, about the infinite might and attributes of Allah who created them, and about the Quran that has been revealed to mankind. Such people live according to information imposed on them by a society full of misconceptions rather than facts revealed in the Quran. Allah defines people of ignorance as those whose forefathers were not warned, so they are unaware. This is from a verse of Quran. The lives of people who are unaware of the Quran have no knowledge of the real nature of worldly life, the truth about death, and after-death experiences of hell and paradise are compatible with their ignorance. Consequently, the matters that make them feel happy, eager, and excited are based upon flawed and erroneous beliefs. See, when there is no knowledge, and when we don't have the zeal to acquire that knowledge, what is left over is ignorance. Our concepts are going to be jumbled. Our thought process would not be straight. You know, one of the reasons of acquiring the knowledge of Islam with passion, with zeal, is that it gives you a direction how to live your own life. So it's to your benefit. It's not Allah or Prophet who's going to benefit from it. The religion, it has come to make your life easier for you. So let's, inshallah, promise to Allah to have that zeal and passion to learn about Islam so we can live a better life. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.podcast.com. ParseToday.com Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the VIRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parsetoday.com/en.
United Nations has blacklisted Yemen's Ansarullah law, accusing it of violating children's rights. The move has drawn Yemen's ire. Yemen's political leadership has blamed the world body for its apathy towards the continued Saudi violations against the children of Yemen. Yemeni officials say the UN should play its role to lift the Saudi blockade on Yemenis that's killing children instead of blacklisting the Ansarullah law movement. Member of the Supreme Political Council, Mohammed al-Houthi, dismissed as baseless the UN accusation, saying it did not refer to an investigation on the ground as the movement had demanded. Meanwhile, Yemen's Minister of Information said the UN had turned a blind eye to the ongoing Saudi blockade and attacks on Yemenis, which have led to the death of tens of Yemeni children on a daily basis.
I think it's a political decision by the part of the United Nations. They're being faced with pressure from the United States, Britain, and France, who are making billions of dollars selling arms to Saudi Arabia and to the United Arab Emirates. And in addition, I think it may have been part of a concession for the re-election of the current Secretary General for the United Nations, who just was re-elected. So it's clearly political, it's not fair, and I guess it points to the fact that the United Nations is losing its utility and is becoming sort of a pawn the part of the Western powers, in particular the United States.
Observers say the United Nations blacklisting of Ansarullah has no relation to the humanitarian situation in Yemen. They believe that the UN must take real action against the Saudi blockade if it has real intentions to end the suffering of millions of Yemenis. Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a devastating war on Yemen in March 2015. The war has killed thousands of civilians, including women and children. Yemen is now dealing with what the United Nations has called the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The UN added the Saudi-led coalition to its blacklist of violators of children's rights in 2016, a move that was soon reversed by former UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. Ban Ki-moon said he delisted the coalition after he faced pressure from a number of Saudi Arabia's allies that threatened to cut crucial funding to many UN programs.
This was one of the most painful and difficult decisions I have had to make. The report describes horrors no child should have to face. At the same time, I also had to consider the very real prospect that millions of other children would suffer grievously if, as was suggested to me, countries would defund many UN programs.
The move drew angry reactions from human rights activists who said the UN Secretary General's office had hit a new low. Last year, the UN removed the coalition from its blacklist, citing a decline in the number of those killed and maimed in Yemen.
I would say that the Saudis and some of their rich allies would be threatening the United Nations to withdraw funding. Under Donald Trump, they did withdraw funding for the UN, and Biden has restored it, but I suspect that there was some hidden agenda on it that they still want to support Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and don't like the fact that the Ansar movement and the Shias in Yemen like to be independent and not being dictated to by the Saudis and indirectly by the United States and its allies.
The Saudi-led coalition's blockade and its war on Yemen continue to claim millions of innocent lives. The United Nations has a responsibility to help end people's suffering. Taking a one-sided approach to conflicts will never resolve them.
Back in June 2019, Iran shot down an intruding RQ-4A Global Hawk unmanned reconnaissance aircraft with surface-to-air missiles over the coastal province of Hormuzgan. The high-tech spy drone belonged to the United States and had a price tag of over $120 million. Americans claimed that the drone was flying in international airspace when hit. However, Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif dismissed the claim and later in the day announced that Iran had located parts of the drone in its territorial waters. The downing of the American spy drone sent a strong message to Washington. It signaled that Iran's deterrence power is way higher than Americans' expectation and that Iran will not be bullied by any country, even the U.S. Any intrusion on its soil and airspace will be met harshly. They are its red lines. The incident was not the first time a U.S. military spy drone was seized or shot down by Iran's air defense forces. There were several similar instances in the previous years. Washington, which found its image damaged by the incident, threatened Tehran with a military attack. However, knowing Iran's defensive capabilities, the U.S. refrained from an armed confrontation. Coincidentally, Iran experienced cyber attacks after that. The U.S. also imposed fresh anti-Iran sanctions against Tehran's move. Iran has always said that its military power is solely for defensive purposes and does not pose any threat to other countries. Nevertheless, Iran says it will not leave any act of aggression against its territory unanswered.
Well, my take on this was that the Americans were trying to provoke the Iranians into an intemperate, overly aggressive response. The Americans are trying to push the Iranians into a corner and force them to retaliate against an American provocation that would guarantee the United States would be able to say, see, look what the Iranians have done to us. We had to go in with horse foot and guns and teach them a lesson and end their aggressive ways. So I think that by making a temperate response, knocking down the drone, and then sitting back and waiting for the American reaction was an excellent example of a very cool, calculated response by the Iranian government. They would not be bullied, and they would not let themselves be pushed into a corner and making a mistake.
On January 3rd last year, top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes were assassinated in a U.S. drone strike. 5 days later, Iran retaliated by firing dozens of missiles at Ain al-Assad Air Base in Al Anbar Governorate, western Iraq, declaring that the attacks were part of its promised tough revenge for the assassination. It also sent a message to Israel not to continue threatening Iran militarily. According to Pentagon, over 100 American soldiers suffered traumatic brain injuries as a result of the missile strike against Ain al-Assad. Since then, U.S. bases in Iraq have come under increasing rocket and drone attacks amid rising tensions over the continued American military presence in the Arab country. Also, Washington has started to withdraw its anti-missile batteries from countries including Iraq, Kuwait, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia. The move reflects recent changes on the ground in the West Asia region.
But as I was told, the Americans simply think that they can get away with it. So the Iranian response in Iraq after the murder of Lieutenant General Soleimani and the deputy director of the popular mobilization units in Iraq was, again, a very temperate response. The Iranians told the Americans through the Iraqis that a response is coming, that rockets will be fired, and you better run for the hills. So I think that the Iranians have again proved that they will not be bullied, they will not be provoked, and it's the Americans who are the danger, the Americans who are constantly seeking an attempt to start a war against Iran.
The presence of U.S. forces in the West Asia region has increased instability. This is most notably seen in Iraq, then in Syria and Afghanistan. Yemen could be on that list too. After spending trillions of dollars in West Asia, the U.S. has nothing to show for it, something the former U.S. President Donald Trump admitted to. Iran's Judiciary Chief Seyed Ebrahim Raisi has won Iran's 2021 presidential election by a landslide. He managed to secure nearly 18 million of the votes and become the 8th president of the Islamic Republic. Some 29 million Iranians voted in Iran's 13th presidential election. Raisi won the presidential race amid an all-out political and media war led by the United States and its Western and regional allies targeting the event. The Islamic Republic's opponents attempted to portray a gloomy picture of the polls to discourage popular contribution. However, the Iranian people foiled the enemy's plots as the turnout was beyond their perceived low notion. Also, the public reception forced officials to extend the time limit on the election, with polls remaining open until past midnight. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, praised the epic turnout in Iran's 13th presidential election. The leader said the high turnout neutralized the campaigns launched by the enemy's media outlets and ill-wishers to create voter apathy in the election. Ayatollah Khamenei said nothing could break the Iranian nation's will and disrupt the election. Meanwhile, the outgoing Iranian President Hassan Rouhani met President-elect Ebrahim Raisi in person to congratulate. The outgoing president stated his full support for his successor and stressed his willingness to offer assistance to the new government. In turn, President-elect Raisi pledged all-out efforts to resolve the country's problems, especially those affecting the people's livelihoods. Raisi noted that he would consult with the outgoing administration, parliament, and the elites to achieve the goal. Iran's president-elect Ebrahim Raisi received congratulatory messages from several world leaders for winning Friday's presidential election, including Russian President Vladimir Putin, who expressed hope for further development of constructive cooperation between Moscow and Tehran. Raisi will take office in 45 days. He has promised to form a hard-working, anti-corruption, and revolutionary cabinet and fight corruption and uproot poverty.
You know, we can say that the main and the only loser in this election was were those who actually were discouraging people from going to the ballot boxes and turn out to vote. And either if those politicians inside Iran or those dissident Iranians outside Iran, in some cases, who attacked actually the voters against the law. So they were the main losers because they were trying to discourage people to turn out, to say that people are not supporting the government, and that means that there is lack of legitimacy, and because of that, the government should not be respected and considered respected, actually, being recognized in, by other countries.
Sixty-year-old Ebrahim Raisi will take office in August. He is the 8th president of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Raisi has promised to fight corruption and uproot poverty. He campaigned with the slogan, Popular Administration, Strong Iran, on a platform of uprooting corruption in the executive branch, fighting poverty and inflation, and creating jobs. President-elect Raisi is set to take power at a critical time as Iran seeks to salvage its tattered nuclear deal with major powers and free itself from illegal and inhumane U.S. sanctions that have driven a sharp economic downturn. Washington has been using sanctions as a weapon by preventing Iran from buying even its necessities and blocking the country's access to its overseas financial resources. Ebrahim Raisi had stated before that he would vigorously pursue efforts to get rid of sanctions imposed by the United States. He had said that his government would not allow the economy to be conditioned by the fate of sanctions removal talks, adding that Iranians want the economy to be stable.
You know, first, either the Americans leave the sanctions or not, Iran is going to diversify its basket of the diplomacy and the foreign policy and relations with other countries. So Iran has signed a memorandum of understanding for 25 years with China, is working on something similar to that with Russia and with some other countries. And it means that Iran is going to move forward and move on from the JCPOA and do not rely only on that. It's not the basket to put all the eggs on that.
President-elect Ebrahim Raisi has vowed to pursue sanctions removal efforts. He has noted that one should not deal abjectly with those who want to trample over the rights of the Iranian people. With him being the president, Washington is faced with a choice: remove all sanctions and return to compliance if it truly wants to save the nuclear deal, or follow the path of its past, confrontation, and threats. Meanwhile, Iran has forged strong ties with both Russia and China, and will proceed with its agenda with or without the U.S.
Relations between the United States and Russia came under the spotlight this week as presidents of the two geopolitical rivals sat down for talks in Geneva. Before the meeting, Washington and Moscow had acknowledged that relations were at rock bottom. A series of tit-for-tat actions, which escalated in recent years, has left bilateral diplomatic ties in tatters. Moscow and Washington are at loggerheads over a host of issues, including the situation in Ukraine, arms control, human rights, and cybersecurity. The depth of differences between the two sides had dashed hopes of any breakthrough during the meeting between the U.S. President Joe Biden and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin. The Geneva talks lasted around 3 hours. The two presidents did not even come close to resolving any of the acrimonious conflicts that have sent U.S.-Russian ties to their lowest level in decades. However, Biden and Putin agreed to launch a dialogue on atomic arms control. They also said that they would return ambassadors to Washington and Moscow to ease diplomatic contacts. The ambassadors were withdrawn in March for consultations after Washington accused Moscow of interference in America's 2020 presidential election. That is a claim that Moscow vehemently denies. The agreements in Geneva this week have somehow reduced bilateral tensions for now, but it is definitely too early to know whether the two rivals will eventually engage in meaningful cooperation. The presidents of the U.S. and Russia hailed their dialogue in Geneva. The Russian president said Biden was an experienced statesman. But despite the pleasantries, deep differences persisted in the meeting and after that. There was almost no sign of agreement on issues like cybersecurity and Ukraine, where Russia and the West have been locked in a tug of war for years. Putin warned the U.S. against imposing new sanctions on Russia. Putin and Biden also clashed over human rights issues with the American leader, threatening devastating consequences for Moscow if Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny, who is now serving a 2.5-year sentence, died in jail.
As we know, Washington loves to throw human rights violation allegations against everyone, which is now extremely ironic because the current official president of the United States and many Democrats around him acknowledge that the Black Lives Matter movement has legitimate rights in the United States. And the Black Lives Matter movement is a movement that claims that the United States grossly violates the human rights of its own citizens.
Putin dismissed U.S. concerns about Navalny, telling Biden that the opposition leader had ignored the law. The Russian president also criticized the status of human rights in America. Putin specifically named the Black Lives Matter movement and the January 6th attack on Capitol as two cases that show the U.S. has its own grave human rights-related problems. Observers believe it is too soon to judge the outcome of the Geneva meeting. Can the two rivals somehow build on their recent meeting, bridge their differences, and hammer out compromises in the future?
If you look back to the 1990s, after the triumph in the Cold War, the United States sat down, well, certain important elites sat down and wrote the Project for the American Century. And one of the absolute and most key points of that project, to make the century completely American, is to not allow a new competitor to rise. And when you have this sort of zero-sum game, 0-1, you know, win or lose sort of scenario, there's really no way to find any sort of true compromise or make any sort of friendly deal of any sort of meaning.
Bilateral talks on strategic arms limitations could start in a matter of weeks. The talks could serve as a test of the two sides' political will to engage in meaningful diplomacy and cooperation.
Jordanian woman is receiving high demands for the soaps she produces. Why? Because she uses an unusual ingredient. Lara Al-Titi makes soap out of camel milk. She tours different cities in Jordan to find the best camel farms for her business. Titi uses camel milk as the main ingredient for the soaps she produces. That's because she says it has rich benefits and contains more vitamins than cow's milk.
The first stage includes weighing the soap, and I include different kinds of oil to preserve the quality of the soap and its therapeutic benefit. We need to have high foam and tough consistency, and we don't want it to be rancid. We place high importance on the therapeutic material that we add during the production process.
Titi started her soap line at home using a manual process and then expanded it to an independent workshop. Her soap line has now become very popular in Jordan. Titi produces more than 4,000 soap bars a month. She sells them to both domestic and international customers.
The German firm's electric air taxi takes its first flight at a show in an airport near the French capital, Paris. Volocopter's flying taxi, which looks like a tiny helicopter, took off and landed vertically over the airport with no passenger on board during a three-minute trial. Aside from its two-passenger capacity, the aircraft also has some room for luggage. It flew a 500-meter route at speeds of up to 30 kilometers per hour and 30 meters high along the airfield. The flying taxi service would first be operated by a licensed pilot, but the flight would be fully automated over a period of time.
With respect to regulation, initially we will have a fully certified, fully licensed helicopter pilot, just to fit into existing regulation. But we believe over time it can be much simpler to obtain such an operating license for a volocopter. And of course, in the last instance, we want to take a pilot requirement out, and we want these vehicles to fly fully automated. So you will not need a pilot license anymore. You can just summon the volocopter. It will come and pick you up and bring you safely to your destination.
The German firm is entering the urban mobility market with high hopes of playing a major role in the infant industry. Volocopter says its objective is to have a service in operation for 2024 for the 2024 Olympic Games. city with our shoes can be delightful. If you're interested in the experience, visit the Russian capital. A 3.5 kilometer long barefoot trail has recently opened in Moscow's Elk Island Park. It's made of various materials such as pine bark, beach pebbles, and clay. Taking around 40 minutes to complete, the path attracts hundreds of visitors every day. However, some people find it difficult to walk without shoes, calling the path a torture trail. A zoo in Turkey has welcomed a baby elephant from an endangered species. The birth of a female calf at Izmir Wildlife Park has caused excitement in keepers and visitors. The calf, yet to be named, is the third offspring of parents from Asian species. The International Union for the Conservation of Nature classifies the Asian elephant as endangered due to their rapid decline in the wild. The Asian elephants are primarily threatened by poaching, fragmentation, and loss and degradation of habitat. Currently, around 20 to 40,000 Asian elephants are living across the world, five of which inhabiting Turkey's Izmir Zoo.
Over 300 classic vehicles have taken part in a retro rally across Estonia. The 1,000-kilometer rally kicked off in the town of Paide. It drew participants from Latvia and Finland. Their motto is Straight Ahead to the Past. The vintage cars participated in the event were mostly produced between 1930 and 1980. Experts say all the vehicles are in good condition. However, they doubt if all the vehicles can make it to the end of the five-day rally. Palestinian artist has come up with the idea of making children feel happy after the recent Israeli aggression on the besieged Gaza Strip left many people dead. Amna Sami is a young Palestinian artist who has gathered Palestinian kids in the city of Beit Lahia, north of Gaza. That's where houses were destroyed by Israeli airstrikes and bombings during the recent aggression on the territory. Sami draws the Palestinian flag as well as the map of Palestine on children's cheeks as patriotic symbols. She says she does that to say that these people in the midst of destruction will become strong again. Sami says by painting on kids' faces, she wants to send a message to the world.
I'm sending a message to the world that our children should live like other children in the world, away from danger and destruction. It is their right in life to live as children in a safe place, a place that gives them something to live a normal life.
Palestinian kids say they feel happy when Sami paints their faces. The Israeli regime launched this devastating onslaught on Gaza in early May. At least 256 Palestinians, including 66 children, were killed during the 11-day war. Turkish band has found musical inspiration in a most unlikely place, a local landfill. Here's more. Members of Funk Istanbul have assembled instruments from the dump in a junkyard in Istanbul. They used their ingenious new tools to play Turkish folk music. The band aims to raise awareness about recycling. Turkey is one of the biggest producers of municipal waste globally. The country has a low recycling rate. Only 12% of waste is repurposed there.
Technology has come in handy to rescue animals in disaster zones. American cinematographer Douglas Thron has used a high-tech infrared drone to save animals from fire or storm, or even those who are stuck in trees. The drone he uses has a large thermal camera, a spotlight, and zoom lens. The good point is that the aerial vehicle does not make too much noise, therefore it does not scare away animals.
So what I do is I fly infrared drones primarily at night over disaster areas after a hurricane or a fire hits, and I look for people's pets, whether it be cats or dogs, and I also look for injured wildlife. And then either I or rescue crews will go in and rescue the animals after I spot the animals after these natural disasters.
Thron has so far rescued hundreds of stranded animals in various places in the US and Australia. Emergency services have allowed him to participate in rescue efforts after making sure that the drone works well to achieve its goal.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A video has gone viral showing animals at a U.S. zoo enjoying their bath time becoming clean as a new pin. Keepers at Chicago's Brookfield Zoo washed the animals to celebrate International Bath Day. From anteaters to rhinos all got sprayed with a water hose. They seemed to love their bath time as it kept them cool in the summer heat. Zoo officials say the occasion is to honor ancient Greek scientist Archimedes, who made a discovery while in the bath. Be pleased to know life is going back to normal as countries around the world are easing coronavirus restrictions. Disneyland in the French capital of Paris is saying bonjour to visitors once again with all necessary precautions. But everyone missed that. The theme park reopened its doors to the public with limited tickets and an online reservation system. All visitors over 6 years old are required to wear face masks and to observe social distancing guidelines. New attractions, including a hotel and various car rides, are also available for guests. Disneyland Paris was shut for over 7 months due to rising COVID-19 infections. This is the first time since January 2020 that all the six Disney resorts are open. Children have their own ways of remembering the dead. In Gaza, Palestinian kids fly kites in memory of their peers who lost their lives in the recent Israeli onslaught. Dozens of kids participated in the event, holding kites bearing the pictures of 66 little victims. According to the organizers, the goal was to send a message to people around the world that Palestinian kids have the right to live a free and happy life. The children said their dream is to fly in the sky without any restrictions or wars. A herd of wild Asian elephants in China has turned into international stars after leaving their natural habitat in Yunnan province. The herd of 15 elephants is said to have left home in southwest China 15 months ago, but it was in April when they grabbed officials' attention after they were spotted by locals. The elephants have so far trekked nearly 500 kilometers across the country. They have traveled through villages and towns and even stopped for a rest. Local authorities have welcomed these mammoth travelers with treats of sweet corn and bananas. They are monitoring the elephants' movements with drones while keeping them away from residential areas.
Chinese grandma has given a dazzling display of her masterly kung fu performance at a martial arts competition. The 98-year-old woman and her son took the stage as a curtain raiser to the event. The duo put on a kung fu show before a large crowd of spectators who were impressed by her skillful gestures. She was invited to the competition to act as a judge.
I started practicing martial arts when I was only five. I would box every day, learning movements like chopping, pushing palm, and thrusting palm. Though I am old now, my strength hasn't gone.
Zhang says she's inherited her family's martial arts. She's rumored to have a sense of justice from a very young age and try to help others, which earned her quite a reputation where she lives. Traditional martial arts have been passed down in the Zhongqing village located in Zhejiang province for 500 years. Let's go to Italy, where Mount Etna has put on an eye-catching show with its spectacular eruptions. Red hot lava fountains and plumes of smoke spewed up into the sky. The main eruption was located at the southeastern crater of the volcano. Mount Etna is Europe's tallest active volcano. It's located above the Sicilian town of Catania. It often erupts but rarely causes damage. However, nearby residents have to deal with ash showers. Geological studies show that Mount Etna has been active for more than 2 million years now. Egypt has opened its first archaeological replica factory in an attempt to promote its culture worldwide. The factory was inaugurated in response to people's demand for having detailed copies of ancient treasures. So far, over 6,400 high-quality replicas of ancient Egyptian artifacts have been produced. More than 150 artists work to make the goods out of stone, wood, and even gold.
The materials with which these are made are high quality. The highest and most elegant materials are being used to make these samples, and the materials are very close to those used to make the original artifacts.
The models have certificates showing that they are identical copies of the original artifacts. Each replica also has a barcode that provides extra information about the item. The factory is located in Kayuba, about 35 kilometers northeast of the capital, Cairo.
Now, a lot of people don't like rats and find them disgusting most of the time. However, the rodents are doing life-saving work in Cambodia. Now, the Southeast Asian nation has deployed new squad of African giant pouched rats to sniff out old landmines. The new recruits have shown an exceptional ability at their task, with their handlers claiming 100% accuracy. There are now nearly 50 demining rats working in the field in Cambodia. The country started using the animal services in 2016, and they have helped detect and clear hundreds of landmines since. Last year, especially heroic rat called Magawa attracted global fame after receiving a gold medal for his work. The hero rat, who is now retired, detected over 71 landmines.
A muralist from Greece is blending mythology with graffiti and street art to depict how COVID-19 has impacted lives around the globe. Ficus Antonios has painted the walls of many cities around the globe. He is now in the Cypriot capital, Nicosia, to continue his work. His latest artwork depicts Americus, a Cypriot mythical figure who was punished by the gods and turned into a plant. The Greek artist believes this theme is similar to the situation people around the globe have experienced since the pandemic began. He explains many people have grown roots because they're staying in one place for so long.
IRIB English Radio.